I'm Isander.
I'm Coda.
And today we're going to be talking about the one, the only, the Ultramarines, baby.
Oh, jeez.
It happened. They escaped the loser's bracket. Only beaten by the Night Lords. That leaves the heroes of the Imperium and the Inquisition fighting
tooth and nail for third place.
Pretty much. Last one disappears into the void. As always, you know, vote in the comments, like, subscribe. You know what the machine's like at this point. We both do. So let's just get that going. Also, if you want more episodes of this, we upload twice a week. Once here, once on Patreon. So you get a bonus episode. And you help support the show by heading on over to patreon.com/IsanderandCoda. And we will be covering the de facto poster boys for the setting.
They are, you open a box, or you buy a box of Warhammer 40k figurines, and it's blue.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot of blue.
If you want to go buy Space Marines, the cover is probably blue. You want to go buy a Codex, the cover is probably blue. If you want to buy a book, the cover is probably
blue.
These are the de facto protagonists of the setting, almost. I'm going to get in so much trouble for that. They're so prolific in 40K media. You may not know what 40K is in its entirety, but I show you a Space Marine, and you're probably going to point at an Ultramarine. That's just how ubiquitous they are, and that's kind of how they work in canon, too. So it's not just in our world. In their world, paint a Space Marine. The kid's going to paint it blue. It's like that thing that Enzo said where, paint a fast car, and the kid will make a red car, Ferrari. So it's kind of like that.
The red is the fastest color, as we know.
Of course.
Yes.
They clearly keep the lights on at GW. That's a fact. They're clearly beloved by a few authors. That's also a fact. And the... I will have to be fair here, because every episode I do, I try to hype them, because every faction deserves their day in the sun. Even though I may not personally like it, some of you do, and you deserve a good video. It's just how it works.
So here's what I'm going to say. You've been hyping them since we started this channel. Does that mean you're going to become their top detractor for this episode?
I will start with slander.
Aha, slander.
Exactly. Because they have more named characters than some entire factions have on the entire battlefield. I'm not talking, named figure. No, I'm talking units you can play. There are more named. You can have an Ultramarine army and go, that one's Kato, that one's Khalgar, that one's Gil. And you can just keep going like that for hours. It's ridiculous. The list is so long. So it's only fair that we start with a little bit of slander. And they're kind of wound like springs. I mean, if Space Marines are already very tense things, the Ultramarines are really, really tense. They are the uptight paper pushers of the bunch. They're the only Space Marines who would bring a rule book to a food fight. They're that level of just obstinate. They are the most likely Space Marines to need a hall pass as they go to the bathroom. They're also the most likely to have had to write 100 times with chalk on a board, I will not deviate from the Codex Astartes. I will not deviate from the Codex Astartes. Over and over and over again.
They're most likely to be that one gal at the DMV that really hates you and you really hate her back. Yes, I'm talking about you, Sharon.
Yeah, pretty much. That book, the Codex Astartes, is effectively glued to their hand or their hip, and they turn to it before they do anything. I'm talking, you need to open a jar of pickles. Ah, yes, let's go to page 5671, subsection B, subsection C-D. Ah, yes, there. It's a picture of Gilman using a very long wrench to open this. Okay, I know what to do now. That's how I'm talking... A Space Marine is sleeping, and on their bedstand is a copy of How to Win Friends and Influence Xenos. That's how these guys work. It's a really specific aesthetic, and if you're not into it, I'm sorry, it's not going to change.
How to Win Friends and Influence Xenos by Dale Carnegie.
That's pretty... Oh, God, that's a good cover. I need to find my copy of that. they are, if washi paper could say, I told you so, it's... terrible, because every party needs a pooper. That's why we invited you. And that's what they're in the setting for. It's the obvious. But now that that's out of the way.
Oh, God.
Let's get to the Codex Astartes. Because it's kind of overplayed the importance of the book, but it's also kind of not. In a sense, you have to understand them. We gotta cover the book. It's the same way to cover
that. Lorgar had the Divinicus.
Mm-hmm.
Gilliman has the Codex Astartes.
Okay, I'm really going to get in trouble for this one. I would say the Codex Astartes matters more to them than Lorgar's fan fiction to his own. And I like Lorgar. If I do a Lorgar episode, I'll hype him too. But like that book to the Word Bearers, relative to the Codex Astartes, to the space...
Word Bearers are at least able to deviate slightly.
They're
able to like burn that heretic instead of hang him.
What I will say is... The Codex Astartes was penned 10,000 years ago, and in that entire time, some people have chosen to follow it to the letter, some people have chosen not to follow it at all. The Ultramarines have made one change, and that is, those guys have fought Tyranids before, they should group together because they know how to deal with this. That's the only change. That's it. 10,000 years. The book is still in first edition. No, second edition now. That's it.
Honestly, that's like a 1.5 edition, a 1.1.
Yeah. The Codex Astartes is basically the art of war, if it was written by their dad, Robot Gilliman. Robute Gilliman. Wow, I actually accidentally screwed it up.
But yeah, that was...
Yeah, that was a flub.
Completely candid?
Okay, it's because I've always hated his first name, I'll be honest. But, like, it's also fine. It's just Robute. There's 101 nicknames.
It's supposed to be, like, Robert, but, like, corrupted by, like, 10,000, 30,000 years of language.
I think it's the most normal sounding name of the Primarchs. I mean, you have Angron running around, a dude named the Lion. So yeah, it just sounds like a normal name, and it's kind of jarring compared to the rest of them.
Lion has a normal last name.
L. Johnson. Fair enough. And it is this book on strategies to employ in battle, organization, and patterns of thought that can, if used correctly, win most fights it's put against, is the way it is. The book itself, front to back, and part of why it's held up so well, and another reason people don't like the Ultramarines a lot, is because chunks of it are Gilliman's own thoughts. Like, this is how I have won this fight. If this happens, do this, right? A lot of it is also him just looking at his brothers and going, oh, that was really smart, I'm going to copy that now. And not crediting them. So he will see Percherabo pull off some amazing feat of just grinding someone into dust and go, that's useful. Write that down.
To be fair, that makes sense for him.
Cause... I mean, it's intelligent. Intelligent people can look at good ideas and then use them, but I can see why it feels kind of scuzzy when, oh, that was my favorite Primarch's idea, and now you're running around in all blue saying it was I figured it out. Me. Like...
Okay, that part's a little scuzzy, but I can understand why he'd take those tactics. Okay, it seems really, really similar to, like, American, like, case law, where, like, one huge court case will dictate the precedent on, like, how future cases are, like...
You have no idea how happy you just made me with that example. That is perfect.
I think that's what his thoughts were there.
I'm so proud of you.
It's just like, oh, my brother set a precedent there. That's how we deal with these things. Sweet. That's how we're going to deal with this from now on.
So proud of you right now. That is exactly what it
is. He's the law, dude.
Vaguely. The way... There's... Because 40K, the way 40K works is everything is canon, nothing is true. You know? So And when you have that many authors working on... all the properties that are involved in there, they're all going to have different perspectives on this book. And it usually falls into one of three categories. Option one, quite literally being the Ultramarine Bible. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's in the same regard we hold our holy books, where you have it in reverence, you have sections of it put left, right, and center, and it is material that holds people together through a shared reverence of it, and not necessarily what is in there, if that makes sense.
You go to a hotel in any hive world, it's in the top drawer of the...
And that's how some people see it. That's bang on. The other option is the one that I tend to fall into more, and this one has a lot more evidence to it, but it's also just because the guy who has this perspective has written a lot more books, so it's kind of cheating. But it's kind of like The Art of War, where it's this collection of strategies. To go back to option one, too, the jarring thing about option one that a lot of people don't like is option one presents it as canon de facto cannot lose a fight. It is, if you follow the Codex Astartes front to back, if you have it memorized, which is impossible, so if you have like five people who each have a different section memorized, and together you can put that knowledge to use, you can win any fight. It is the end all be all when it comes to strategy. It is factually in like factually correct. You can see why people don't like that very much.
Yeah, because it's very it's almost too structured.
Right, you can't pen a book that just does. It's impossible. The thing would have to be, and it's huge. The Codex Astartes is massive. It's not like a tiny pocket thing. It's like a tome.
It's a tome.
With like sections and subsections, and you are not off when you're talking about it looking like case law almost. Just,
ooh. It's case law for chess.
Pretty much. Pretty much. The option two is like the collection of strategies, philosophies, conduct, organization. It's more how I thought and how other people thought. And hopefully this can be useful to you. And in effect, it's freeing you up to not have to think about certain things so you can think about the problem directly ahead of you. This is the stuff we know works best. And it's the reason it's held up so well is because it's the fundamentals. Gilliman's not penning anything original here. It's just, you know, that's obviously best practice. It's common sense. Mm-hmm. Like chapter one, go gym, drink water. Okay, yeah, sure. We didn't need a tactical genius to figure that out. But because they adhered to it so rigidly, you it can works. See why it makes them such a potent force, right?
So you have the options of it's either like the Bible or it's more like Go Read No Show, where it's like, okay, here's a guide to how you should live your life if this is your goal.
Yeah, pretty much that. I like the Art of War example specifically because that's stuff that the U.S. Army is required to read like today. I think, I'm not sure if Go Read No Show is on that list. It's a
very odd
and eclectic list, but I can see why you would need it to be an officer in the armed forces.
Go Read No Show is all about, like, here's how you live a warrior's path.
A lot of the books on that list are thought-based, or like giving you schemas and things. So
yeah, Go Read No Show is the same way.
Maybe it's on that list. I'm not sure. I don't have the list memorized. That one is the most likely, like I said, because even Gilliman himself, this is the one that he seems to adhere to. He admits, I was given a lot of power. That's no doubt I can punch a man. He turns into red mist. That's really cool. I understand pretty much anything you put in front of me, and no one strategy will work against me the same way twice. It just doesn't happen. I can't see the future. This was me freeing you up as my sons, because I know you are intelligent beings, to be able to think. Fights can be won through your heroism directly. Don't just stick to the papers, please. And so when you consider that's what the author thinks
about it. Is that foreshadowing?
Maybe. Possibly. We'll see. And then there's one more option, which is held by some people, and that is, it is about as useful as pissing on a volcano or wiping with sandpaper. That's it.
You would be better off using the Codex Astartes as toilet paper. That's option three.
That's how Chaos players see it.
I see. That's a Chaos mindset.
Yeah, pretty much Chaos grindset. You can choose which one you want to go with. Because, again, everything is canon, but not everything is necessarily true. When you're writing something over the course of multiple decades with tens to hundreds of writers, you're going to bump into each other a few times. So it's kind of up to you. Whatever makes you happiest when you're painting your toy soldiers.
It's also, I mean, it's up to interpretation, like all books are. Like, you could, like, take some things from one book and some things from another book, and you could come to your own conclusions.
Exactly. The thing that is just not debatable, though, is the fact that this book is important to them, because it was written by Dad, who they revere to a ridiculous, just tremendous degree. He was dead there for a second, but unlike pretty much everyone else in the family tree, he is never going to be a deadbeat dad unless he is beaten dead. Like, Gilliman will always be there for his kids unless he is interred in a stasis chamber with his throat slit, which is exactly
where
it's exactly where he's been for a while. That is the one time he has walked away from his kids. The rest of his brothers have done that to some degree, varying degrees.
Well, I wouldn't call that walked away. More like dragged away forcibly, literally by the throat.
Yeah, exactly. They, while he was dead there, they they moved him to their North Pole and built a borderline city-sized shrine to him.
Did it have workshops?
It was called... Oh, it has... It was... I think it was like the Fortress of Organization or like the Monastery. It's that level. Oh, I don't remember the name, but it's in Gilliman's book. It's been a while since I've read it. It's something that tier of like the stack of paper upon which we worship him.
The Fortress of Organization.
You will put the real name up, but it's you'll see it and you'll go, oh, he was not that far
off. The Castle of Case Law.
Pretty much. And it is clad. It's just gold and blue everywhere with like, okay, not really, but basically cardboard cutouts of Gilliman left, right, and center with like massive like passages from the Codex Astartes hanging from the rack. I'm talking like it is a venerated, people make pilgrimage there. And I'm not talking ultramarines come here to see dad. I'm talking regular people. Millions of them will come there to see the Primarch in stasis.
I could see why the Emperor in TTS mm-hmm. thought they were so annoying and obnoxious.
You can see why you either love the Ultramarines or you hate them. There's really nobody who's middling.
They're so obnoxious.
And so you look at that. It's literally like if you decided, okay, we're going to make the Senate floor, also the Library of Congress, also our biggest church, also DC as a city, and we're going to venerate George Washington himself smack dab in the middle. It's that level of just, whoa.
What are we doing here?
Whoa. And you know for a fact, if we did that tomorrow, people would be making pilgrimage to see it. That's what happened to Gilliman. And the reason that he's held in such high regard, and again, critically, it's not just ultramarines coming here. It's not just everybody. Citizens of Ultramar. It's, do you have the change to get here? And even if it's your life savings, you'll do it. It's like their holy city almost. And the reason he's held in such high regard is because he's one of like five Primarchs who actually did their job. I'm talking five who understood the assignment from birth. Gilliman has always done exactly what he was made to do with ridiculous efficiency. He's obviously his own episode. He may be his own three-parter, but he may stop me before that happens. If you want to boil it down to its simplest form and avoid a three-parter, though, it is leading by example. That is fundamentally what Gilliman is this. He's not like the Iron Warriors where they're, because he's not the only efficient legion out there. The Iron Warriors are crazy machine grid-like efficiency. They will make anything faster than anyone. It's kind of jarring how good they are at it. No, he's an efficient and insanely intelligent machine, even amongst his brothers, some of whom are half machine at this point. And specifically serving as a textbook example of what a good leader looks like. It's very clear all the Primarchs are made to do a specific thing. Gilliman's was just to be a statesman, a governor, the logistics guy. He's everything will get there as fast as it should, exactly how it should, every single time.
He's in the background just making mm-hmm. everything happen.
And critically, because he's not the only intelligent Primarch, he doesn't suffer from the other problems some of them have. He's not always buried in books, like Magnus, for example, which, slight slander, but like it's kind of true. He's in a pyramid buried in books, let's be honest here.
Do you think he has a mini pyramid inside that big pyramid made of books?
He's so magical, he could probably have an infinite labyrinth of pyramids without any issue. Like, Magnus, you don't understand. Magnus can make himself taller at will. He's that just magical.
He's the magic guy.
Yeah, he's the magic man. He's the best psyker.
I just had the image in my head of just like Magnus in a book fort in the middle of his pyramid.
Pretty much that. He's an episode on a different day. Gilliman, however, he reads books, but he's, for every theory he sees, he does not consider it learned until it's applied and then tested and then tweaked. And that's why he's so good at pretty much anything. Much to a lot of people's chagrin, because you can go out and read all the books you want. You can go read 100 books, but we've shown this as a fact. The best way for you to learn is to go do, right? There's a reason doctors have to go through so much school and then go through hours of rigorous testing and then labs too. And then, oh, congratulations, you did it. Now residency. And it's like, First of all, shout out to all the medical students listening to us, because we actually have a few of them, and you are climbing a mountain most people can't even look at properly. So I'm beyond proud of you. You've got this. But that, in and of itself, proves that theory and practical kind of yin and yang. And that's the balancing game that he plays, except he is immortal, basically, and can just do this at a rate that is beyond calculable for humans. So, given enough time, like, he didn't...
He'll have pretty much anything under his belt.
Yeah, like, from the get-go, he was always... From a kid, you can tell, like, oh, that kid's way too beefy. He's probably going to be a Primarch. Like, Primarchs, you can tell there's something off about them. But a lot of him is just observing and then mending. And then observing and then mending. Like, oh, that's interesting. Let me try that. And then it works. And then he tweaks it and then does it again.
He's the one kid who, like, took apart his parents' computer when he was, like, 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And is, like, building the infinite labyrinth of, like, water-cooled PCs now.
Exactly. He is... That is all well and good, but the reason he shines as a leader specifically is because he drills this into pretty much every Ultramarine. They are the group that says, they never say, do as I say, not as I do, just do what I'm doing. That is pretty much it. Because I'll be honest, I've gotten the do as I say, not as I do, and I'm like, if it's so smart, why aren't you doing it? It's always infuriated me. But that kind of leadership consistency makes it so even the most asinine things they're pointing out, you just go, oh. It's weaponized peer pressure, basically. It's like, I'm not telling you each plate in your armor must be 5 centimeters apart for optimum cooling and movement. I'm telling you, mine is. His is.
Why aren't yours?
Is there something else you've learned that we don't know?
And if you have knowledge, share it with the class.
And it's like, well, I guess I'm wrong here. Let me go space them out 5 centimeters, I suppose. And this approach has trickled down pretty much throughout the entire Ultramarine structure. And so you have this cohesive group of people who are critically not good. Like, they're decent at 1v1s, but you put them against, you know, some of their other siblings and they're going to lose every time.
Like one Ultramarine versus one World Eater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
We know how this is going to shake out.
Actually, one of my favorite Ultramarine moments is not one Ultramarine against one World Eater, but one Ultramarine against the World Eater, Karn, and he's surrounded by more. And I love that scene so much, because he's surrounded, he will die. That is going to happen, and they're kind of bragging about it, and so they're like, why don't you just surrender at this point? I mean... It's obvious. This is lost.
You're going to lose.
Why not surrender?
The fight is already over.
And his response is, makes perfect sense. Lay down your arms then. Like, I respect it so much. They are so committed to the bit. It's kind of annoying, but lovable in a way. It's
like, I am the best. I am that guy.
Exactly. It's everyone...
He's the guy with the Tesla with the custom license plate that reads, I'm him.
Yeah. It's everyone doing exactly what they have to do, because if you don't do it, you're the only one who's not, you know? It's that same peer pressure that kind of leads some kids astray, but, like, it's rigidly enforced to keep them within certain boundaries, right?
It's like positive peer pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And even if like, you know, my direct commander isn't doing it, or like Gilliman himself isn't doing it, he probably did actually do this at some point. So like, ugh, fine, I guess I'll do it.
I guess it works.
Mm-hmm. And it's because of this kind of group cohesion, you get the Ultramarines being this set where you can just take an Ultramarine from anywhere, pair them with an Ultramarine from anywhere, and you have no problems. It'll just be, hi, my name's Tom. Hey. My name's Tim. What's your favorite chapter of the Codex Astartes? I'm a chapter 2 kind of guy. I'm a chapter 6661 kind of guy. Subsection -D. And it's like, yeah, it's alright, I guess. That's it. That's the most conflict you're going to see out of Ultramarines paired together. Just function.
No, I prefer this section of the Codex Astartes.
Yeah, actually, no, the more likely answer is just, oh, that's so true. That's a real gem. Slept on. And it's not just within Ultramarines that this cohesion works. They were famously throughout all of Dad's campaigns.
I want to see Ultramarine Twitter.
It would be the calmest variant of Twitter. It'd just be them agreeing with each other for the most part.
No, just like, all right, bestie, you're so right. That's the best chapter of the Codex.
Yeah. It's led to them, you can slot them with Imperial Guard and they won't have any problems. You could slot them with Sisters and they won't have any problems. They just work with any unit you put them with the only exception being their slightly grating and holier-than-thou personalities, which we will get to later. Like, they will work with you. You may not like them. You know? I'm not saying they're walking in there, smiling, shaking everyone's hands, being very likable. I'm saying they'll work, okay? Like, this cog will fit in the machine. It may not match, but it will. And that's what matters. It is not just the Legion that got this kind of efficiency and this adaptability. It's pretty much all of Ultramar that has this. I mean, if you had to live in 40K, which nobody wants to at all, Ultramar is as close to paradise as you are going to get, pretty much. It is a fully self-sufficient empire within the Imperium that has split outside of it without any... It's not like, oh, it could split. No, it did. It has, without any issue at all. It has a culture beyond the, you know, the usual, this is our God Emperor, he will save us from all. Like, they actually have more to it than that. It's described as being highly functional. If you want to drive places, you can drive places. If you want to take the train instead, you can take the train instead. It's just, it just works.
It's just like a well-oiled machine. It just,
yeah,
it just goes.
Like there, it has massive industries, right? But the most impressive thing about it is, because I'll be honest, industry is not impressive in the Imperium. They can boil oceans away if they want to. It's not that impressive. The thing that is personally impressive to me about Ultramar is they have done it in a way where they acknowledge that planets are like batteries to them, because that's how advanced the Imperium. The Imperium has gotten to the point where they can just go world after world without any issue, just eating them and moving on. But the way Ultramar works is, oh, your marine life is a bit too fragile, let's say, Great Barrier Reef situation, you don't want to get the water too acidic, we'll send you fish from this other planet, they're better suited for it. You just send them wood. And it's that complicated net of, oh, you have a weakness, well, it's fixed by this guy, and this guy's weakness is fixed by this guy, and this guy's weakness is fixed by this guy, and there's multiple massive battlement stations in between all of these trade routes ready to save them if anything goes wrong.
It's
and
like
Gilliman's in the center of it, just moving things around on an abacus.
It's a perfect like distribution of resources.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous how well run. It is described, and this is the part where most people like start to lose it. It's described as somehow being corruption free. Gilliman somehow changed a fundamental human aspect in Ultramar and then recorded it somewhere in that book, I'm
he
sure.
Logisticked out the somehow out the corruption.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a human being, there's still social mobility for you. You can come from a family of factory workers, like, oh, all my family has ever done is make bolter rounds. I am now on the Senate floor. And that's just a viable option. You can become a Marine there, and if you choose to become a Marine, first of all, it's seen as a great honor. You, like, your family will be like, holy, did you see his kid? He went on to become an Ultramarine. It's kind of ridiculous, right? Like, the statues go up, families see it as a real point of pride, like, yes, I provided an Ultramarine. You pair that with the fact that they have reasonable recruitment, and reasonable, it's still like special forces recruitment. It's still difficult, but it's not, hey, you're in Antarctica, bye. Or, we're going to lock you in a coffin for a year and feed you some dead guy's blood while you see visions. We'll see if you make it out. Like, it's just reasonable stuff. And then on top of that,
it's just like, hey, climb that wall.
Yeah, can you climb that wall? Okay, like, fit. He would probably have the fitness grand pacer test. Like, that's fine. And then you pair all that with the fact that all the surgeries to become a Marine will happen in Ultramar's system, which is advanced beyond belief. They have the best bionics.
There's like very little chance it's going to go wrong.
Yeah, the Ultramarine's chapter master is more metal than man, and he's fine. Most people would be dead if it wasn't for, you know, that access.
How metal are we talking? Like, just enough to function, or enough to make the Mechanicum jealous?
I'm talking, if he wasn't an Ultramarine, he'd be in a Dreadnought.
Okay. That puts the scale there.
He's basically just a torso and a head. At this point. And they still fixed it all.
He went full cyberpunk.
Yeah. And so all your surgeries are performed in actually sterile environments with trained medical professionals and oversight, which adds a lot to your survival chances. Oh, also, by the way, as if all that didn't stack the odds in their favor, Gilliman's gene seed is known as one of the most stable of his brothers, bar none.
Well, because it's not asking you to get super angry. It's not asking you to go see visions in a coffin. It's not going to drive you insane. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know, the quadratic formula is now boiled into your very DNA now. Congratulations.
It's not just the testing methods. You're really close, actually. But it's 'cause some people's gene seed is just raw incompatible. It just does not work with certain people. Gilliman's, or it will mutate. Gilliman's is said to have a rate of 0 to 10% chance of mutation. Period. That's it. So you can see why their numbers are just so stacked. And on top of all of that, let's say that wasn't enough. Let's say they still needed to make more Marines. People's gene seed falls apart over time. You know, you can't leave milk in the sun. It will spoil. Gilliman's gene seed is so stable, the stuff that was extracted during the heresy and the stuff extracted today is lateral throws when it comes to freshness.
It's the same quality.
Yeah. Do you see why they're just everywhere now?
I can see why, because it's just so easy.
Yeah, no, it's just, I love it so much because down to Gilliman's DNA, it all just works. It all just arrives on, it's functional. If you want to boil him down to a word, Gilliman and the Ultramarines are functional. That is all I strive to be in life. It's just everything where it should be, as it should be, and that's okay.
There's a perfect outline on the wall for the corkboard, like, or not corkboard, that like mm-hmm. little bar board for your tools. There's a perfect outline for the hammer.
I can just put the hammer. I mean, they're the ones who'd save for retirement. They're the ones who file their taxes on time. They're the guys who understand their health insurance terms. They're the ones who'll explain the stock market to you if you ask nicely. I mean, it's just like, it's how kids see adults, basically. You know the way you look at adults and it's like, ah, Mr. Businessman, big man, he knows everything and
he knows all problems. He's got his life together.
Yeah.
And then you grow up and realize, oh.
Yeah. That's what the Ultramarines are. They're just the boring, put together adults in the setting. They just do it every single time. And that is a complete breath of fresh air compared to the rest of the family tree, because nobody else is normal there, pretty much. So when you compare it to a family with a man so angry he cannot die, another guy who can just walk through forests and appear, you know, anywhere he wants, a third guy who is obsessed with his own reflection, another with angel wings, and a third who, I swear to God, is just an Edgar Allan Poe reference. You know, you can see why people love or hate them, because it's like you either gravitate towards that functionality or you find it deeply boring and you just, ugh, you know, like, okay, cool, you work, but he's a knight of the round table and that's an aesthetic, you know? Not everyone's into the whole, like, super duper functional aesthetic.
The Ultramarines are for the people who load up an RPG and they pick human warrior.
And it just works.
And it just works.
It's that ability to just work that makes them the poster boys of the setting. I mean, without any exception, there are few who can just as reliably do as much as they are asked to do without any complications. And it's not just that, oh, they're reliable, we'll send them here. Oh, they have their own empire, they're very self-sufficient, they have a ton of Marines, right? It's not just, oh, they're big, because a lot of people like to think, oh, they're big. When Gilliman woke up, he guesstimated that something like 50 to 60% of all Marines were descended from him at this point. You flip a coin and it's an Ultramarine. You see why they're on everything now? Statistically speaking, you flip a coin, heads, Ultramarine.
It's an Ultramarine.
Every single time. And, I mean, if there is a named demon, it has lost to a named Ultramarine. It's that level of just ubiquity.
They're everywhere. They're just, they're there.
They're there. They're everywhere. G- Gilliman's kids are effectively half of the Imperium's army, and unlike the rest of his brothers, he pays all that child support on time. Every penny. And not a cent more, critically. However, it is not all sunshine and rainbows, as I'm sure you could tell. The first major problem is they're efficient. That's great. They keep everything running. That's great. It's still the most brutal regime imaginable to man.
There's only so efficient you can get this.
No, it's they're enabling that.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, congratulations, you were the head of logistics in 1940s Germany.
Mm.
Right? Right?
Okay.
That's the immediate and first just hard jab against them you can't defend against.
Okay.
Right?
That puts that in the scale.
It's super easy to forget all the time that the Imperium's not, there's no good guy. That's the point, you know, everyone sucks.
Everybody's the villain, so nobody's the villain.
Exactly. Another big con, that's just the one I'm going to get out of the way, because there's no defending that. It's just, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
The other one that's very fair is they are very stuck to that to their modes of thinking, and that leaves them a bit inflexible at times. The only one who isn't prone to this is Gilliman, and even he has had that problem a few times.
He likes his routines.
They war gamed a lot, you know, like brotherly kind of, oh, I wonder, you know.
It's like, who would win?
And my favorite is him against Korax, who's the master of guerrilla warfare, weird asymmetric kind of battles. And Korax beat him 3 times in a row, back to back to back, each time using a weird new unit that Gilliman was like, you can use a civilian to do that? Okay, sure, right? But critically, every time Korax would do something, Gilliman would, it would never work the second time. It's described as, I could always win the battle, but I could never win the wider war. And that's the Ultramarines as a whole. Well, that's their dad. The Ultramarines, again, it's a diluted version of this. So they are a bit rigid. If you hit them with something that the Codex Astartes has prepared them for, oh, you're losing that fight so hard. It's not going to be close, bucko. The problem is, it is a 10,000-year-old book, not prepared for the Tyranids.
Yeah.
And so they have been smacked about. Again, it's ridiculous that book is as old as it is, and they've made one change to it. It needs more than that. Even Gilliman admits this, right? Second of all, they're super holier than thou. Okay, here's the thing. Leading by example inherently means that I think I'm better than you. And you can see why that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. It's the sense of self-righteousness that just oozes out of all of them. And all of the Ultramarines. They're all just, you know, you think you're better than me, don't you?
It's like when you describe your skin routine to, like, your friends trying to, like, bounce ideas off them. And they're just like, oh, you do that? Hmm. Well, I do this, and maybe you should try that, you know?
Just, you know, that's reasonable and fair. No, they're worse than that.
They're worse than that?
No, it's...
Because there is a little bit of subtle, like, no, you're stupid, you don't know what you're doing. No, I'm doing.
The mentality is, of course I would do the right thing. I must teach this riffraff how to operate, or else they will just be lost. It's that level. I mean, it's so inane and stupid. They would see... An Ultramarine walks into a room and just, look at that loser. He doesn't even know how to tie his shoes properly in the appropriate Gilliman's grasp knot. We were taught all of this in the 5th grade. It's the most unbreakable knot, like our Primarch's hand. It shall never let go, no matter the shoe, he says to his fellow 8-foot-tall murder machine.
Who has the same knot, just inverted.
It doesn't matter what the knot is. I have a chainsaw I can feed them. It's irrelevant. I haven't missed a shot since we got here. Why are you talking about my shoes? You see the problem? And it leads to some fun and infuriating interactions. Because it's like, what? My plumage doesn't matter. I just headshot 500 people in a row. I ran out of ammo before I missed a bullet. But you're just going to... My plate's the wrong color. Okay. Sure, whatever. They're the ones most likely to be talked bad about behind their back. Because, like, thank God they're gone.
Thank God they're gone, finally.
Like, it's, you're correct. Yes, I should definitely only use G2 pens, but Jesus, you don't need to mention it every time I'm over.
It's just like, but come on, Bic is cheaper. Mm. I just bought it because I needed exactly. a pen right now.
This isn't some moral failing, dude, but that's how they treat it. They are also ripped at constantly for being unfunny prudes. They're kind of prudes, I will give you that. However, they are still human, and in the hands of a good author, they have some really good jokes. One of my favorite being, whenever they're going into battle, because it's the Ultramarines, they say, "We march from a crag," which is basically like, that's Gilliman's homeworld, that's the most important world in all of Ultramar. It gets super special treatment. That's Gilliman's sandpit. That's where he played as a kid. That's where he built a perfect scale model of the Battle of Hastings.
It's like the British running into battle and saying, "For king and country!"
Basically, right? And there's this moment they're preparing for some zero-gravity operations, and so they're all lined up ready, and one looks at another with the dumbest grin on and just says, "We float from a crag." And the other Ultramarine is so immediately infuriated by that and effectively just tells him, "Shut up and do your job."
That one Ultramarine is me.
And I'm like, it's like, I like when they're human. Like, Gilliman cracks jokes. It's one of the funniest things about Gilliman being back, actually, is he's quickly discovered, oh, so in the history books, you just wrote me down as a pencil-pushing dweeb.
Like,
I was incapable of cracking a joke.
You penned me as the square.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's this comical scene where he drops a pencil in full, I'm talking full battle armor he cannot take off. He can't even grip things properly. And so he's like, "Ah, papers, my worst nemesis." And then Ultramarine just goes, "Are you trying to crack a joke, sir?" And Gilliman is described as first trying to turn around, but he can't because his pauldrons are too big. There's this massive iron halo behind his head, so he can't even see properly. So he has to, like, what is it, like George Clooney Batman, just turn his whole body to look at him and says, "Yes, of course I'm joking. Did you think I was just serious the whole time, waxing poetically on paper?" And the guy's just silent. He goes, "Oh my god, you did think that.
How could you think paper is my worst enemy when we've got the Tyranids right there?"
Like, I love it when they're human. But a lot of the time, they're super duper not. They're the resident squares. That does also remind me of my favorite Night Lord moment that happens to the Ultramarines.
Happens to the Ultramarines.
Yeah, no, the Ultramarines are surrounded. The comms are cut. Everything is bad and dark. And they don't know what's going on. And one of them comments, "Oh my god, we can't see anything. They could be staring right at us." And one of the Night Lords breaks into the largest grin and says, "We are." Before chaos ensues. Isn't it fun when they get to be people? I love when you get to see,
I mean,
that.
Sadistic people. Mm-hmm. People that will skin you and then make a blanket out of it, but...
Exactly. Like I said, they can also be beaten by being odd, weird. It won't work often, but if you employ some very creative tactics, you can win the day against the Ultramarines. You just have to catch them with something new. And the last criticism that's very fair is, again, their aesthetic is not for everyone. It's very Roman. They very much so bill themselves as the high functional, just like, "I am the businessman," basically. And so if you're not into that, especially compared to some of the other concepts the Primarchs hold, I could see why it's not your cup of tea, you know? Like, oh, I prefer speeding around on jet bikes and Genghis Khan. You know exactly who to go for there.
It does really seem like the Ultramarines are for the guys who load up an RPG. Like, I was not joking. They are for the guys who load up an RPG and go, human warrior.
Yeah.
Nord heavy armor.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's just like, well, sometimes I want to play a Khajiit, like, thief.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. That's exactly right. That's another really fair dig. If you watch JJK, they're just Nanami. You don't get that?
I don't get that.
I have been sick for a week. I have had nothing to do but binge it.
He has binge-watched all of JJK.
I am fully caught up, and I don't know how they're going to get out of that situation.
That took 2 days.
It did not take 2 days.
That took 2 days.
It took like 3 days. Regardless.
It's not much better.
Regardless. The fairest criticism of them all is the fact that by being the poster boys, they tend to suck all the air out of the room. Because think about it, of all the 40K art you've seen, it's been a lot of space, it's been a lot of Ultramarines, right? Think about now all that air that they've taken out of the room and everyone else is left to share it. 19 other legions, the rest of the major factions, the rest of the tiny factions in the Imperium, and they all have to struggle for the screen time while the Ultramarines are off just ultra saving the Ultra Day, painted in Ultramarine. Only one of those was real, by the way. Yeah, no, really. They're really attached to the Ultra thing. If you have an Ultramar, for God's sake.
Yeah. No, I can see it. Whenever I've hit the editing booth and I am looking for art, mm-hmm. anytime you mention the Ultramarines and I go looking for Ultramarine
art, you always find something different.
There's always something different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always too much for me to use. Every time I go looking for, like, White Scars art, there's all of 7 pieces of art that I can use, and I have to go to, like, weird esoteric Russian websites to find it.
Yeah. And so you can see why that one's super fair, because I get that. If I didn't like them, I'd be upset about that, too. However, I do. So, we're doing great. It's undeniable the kind of mark they leave behind. It's the mark that they have always left behind, pretty much. Ever since they were founded, they've kind of had big main character syndrome. If you'll all please turn to your 20-page Ultramarine Ultra timeline. We'll go over this very quickly. From the very beginning, they were founded from the most stubborn people who actually stand against the Emperor of Man for a while. If that wasn't bad enough, they would then go on to conquer the second most planets under Dad. The only reason they were second, by the way, is they wouldn't just conquer them and move on. They'd fix them. They'd leave them better than they were. They would conquer a planet and then go, ew, feudalism, let me fix this. And just spend the time necessary to redo an entire system of governance, set up trade structures, the whole nine, set up a social ladder, social mobility, and then leave. And they were still second. Like, that's like if Dad asked all the Primarchs, hey, clean the house, and Gilliman cleans the second most rooms while making sure everything has a 7-to-3 golden ratio, everything's exactly where it should be. Oh, that painting needs to be tilted. Okay, that's...
He reorganizes the furniture on his way to clean the room.
Exactly. And it's jarring. It's jarring that they have the time for that. If that wasn't enough, they went on to save the Imperial Fists from extinction. Because they tried there for a second. They really did. The Iron Warriors are yucking it up for that. It was a good one. They're
doing Fortnite dances in the corner atop a wall.
Pretty much. They are the reason the Alpha Legion does not have their Primarch, and they are scattered to the winds. They have fought off every major faction at least 10 times and won 7 of them, because Ultramarines, and they were for a while in a holding pattern after all of that. Because the rest of Ultramarine history, I'm going to bridge it. I hope you're ready for this. Take notes. It's very difficult. It is, we beat enemy A. We beat enemy B. We lost against enemy C, but then we rallied and conquered C, D, and E. And that is exactly how it works. For all of time. And so this led to them being kind of in this weird situation where they're just kind of stale. So not only were they the poster boys, but they were also just there. Molding.
It's kind of like, we already know your gimmick. We know what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Do something else?
But then...
Do something interesting?
Gilliman was revived. And now they have become the funniest tragedy in all of 40K. Because you have this straight man, Mr. Logic McGee, right? Facts and reasoning, waking up in the middle of a holy city built in his name, surrounded by people who venerate him like a god and hold on to his tactical guide as a holy manuscript.
They held on to his pencils and said, the holy relics!
That's a real thing that happened. No, they took him to his office and he just, you know, started working. He grabbed a pencil to start drafting and Khalgar, like, and he's like,
What's the problem here?
And to Khalgar, it's like a holy site. I've never touched those pencils, but to Gilliman, it's an office. Why haven't you touched them?
Why haven't you? They're pencils. Use them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's nothing special about them. I told you where to get them. No, I built a factory here to make them every single time.
I specifically got 0.5 millimeter mechanical drafting pencils because they were the most efficient and they were the most accurate when I was doing my drafting drawings and, like, writing shit out.
Exactly.
Why haven't you touched them? They're meant to be used.
And now you take all of that and then the first thing he's told after he wakes up is, oh, by the way, you're the best guy to run the entire Imperium, literally bar none. Here you go. And he's handed the entire galaxy, which is being eaten by Tyranids on one side, shaken by the orcs on the other side, ripped in half by chaos, with endless swaths of it just going dark on a daily basis. No brothers around him to help at all, save for the ones in chaos who are now coming out in bulk, one starting a plague war in his backyard. Oh, and also that guy who was your father, but a terrible jackoff in every possible way. Yes, he's now venerated as the god among gods, who we sacrifice thousands of souls a day to. And you can't stop this because he's our version of the internet. You shut it off, we all die. You also went down in history as the antithesis of fun, this absolute geek who cares only about waxing poetically on pieces of paper and is allergic to cracking a joke, let alone smiling. The church ate the post office and the trains are run by the Navy. Good luck! And it's so much fun to watch. And it's so... he's quite literally balding from the stress. It's so much fun because the Ultramarines are... this is the best situation for them. Yes, they are the patricians. They are the governors. Gilliman was literally training all of them to rule in case he died or they just won.
This is like their primo situation.
This is their primo situation, but it's also an unwinnable variant of it. So you have them struggling in the situation where they should be thriving, and it's interesting. You see them failing, and it's fun because you get to see them cope and think. It's no longer, yes, Gilliman, the tactical genius who thought through every problem. No, it's Gilliman thinking through the problem, and that's so interesting to observe.
It's no longer, oh, I have been shot in the shoulder, brother. Hold on, brother. Let me consult the Codex Astartes to see how we must bandage this wound.
Yeah, no, it's you see them dealing with human emotions, like Khalgar, the guy whose body is basically just robotics at this point. You see him get jealous when Gilliman comes back. For a brief moment there, because he was running the show. He was the big guy.
I was doing so good.
And then the canon biggest guy came back. and I mean, it's not even like, oh, let's pay respects to Khalgar, he got us this far. It's chuck that loser away, Gilliman's back, baby, party. It's like Khalgar was never there. And that's so much fun to see. There's one Ultramarine just dealing with PTSD now, and that's so much fun to observe. And then my favorite of the bunch is Gilliman just unwrapping the fact that, oh my god, you were a terrible dad. But now you might actually be a god. Was Lorgar right this entire time? And then, if that's not enough, I now need to fix all of this. And you're tied to the middle of it. This is great. Get me more coffee. It's so good. It's so good. It's given them this level of just humanity that I love. Like, a neat little thing is, when Gilliman is at his lowest, stressed out of his mind, he doesn't pray to his father, who is an actual, probably god at this point. Bare minimum can revive you from the dead. That's established. We know this, right? No. He thinks about his mom. His human mom who died 10,000 years ago. That's where his head goes.
He's extremely human.
Right. It's great. How can you hate these guys? Like, come on. You take that and you pair that current situation where they're just losing hard everywhere all the time. And the struggle that is to change the Imperium, because the first thing Gilliman, you obviously things need to change. obviously things need to change. And so we get to see Gilliman actually changing them, moving the plot forward. There are now a new crusade launched. There are new Marines. You're seeing new Marines interacting with old Marines, and it's making old ones feel weird because it's like, is this an iPhone situation? I remember the heresy. You don't. I don't like this.
It's like when you have a dog, but you also want a cat, so you adopt a new cat, and the dog's just like, am I being replaced?
Exactly. So it's causing a lot of very interesting situations. And the thing I like the absolute most about the Ultramarines, and the reason I think they're the most fit to rule of the bunch, is because time and time again, even though they are pompous, even though they are showy, even though they are absolutely certain that they are the best thing since sliced bread, they will regularly abdicate power. Like, Ultramar was reduced to its smallest by will.
Really?
The Codex Astartes, the thing that shatters legions into these smaller chapters, left, right, and center, right? Gilliman penned that, and at the time, he was the largest chapter that was still loyal. He took the biggest hit there. The rest of them were hammered. Now, I'll be fair to them, they were hammered by the heresy, so... You know,
it's probably mostly that.
Right. But still, he had the most to lose there. And he still was the one who came forward and said, dude, no, this is a scary amount of power. There's no reason any one of us should control 1/20 of the military. That's just too much. So we need to split it up. We need to make them individual. So this stuff can, so we don't get a second heresy. And it's that proclivity to. It's the real stuff that makes a person a leader, you know? Like, it reminds me, my favorite moment in history is, well, one of them, is there's like 5 seconds where George Washington could have just become a despot. No debate. Nobody was going to lose. He was not going to lose an election. Like, come on. It was George Washington.
Everybody had his back.
Yeah, right? Like, he was going to win. But instead, he chose to give it up. And that... in and of itself is the hardest thing. The ability to know when to quit. I fixed all the problems I can fix. I'm out.
Like, I've done my duty. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm not good at, and this has moved beyond me.
And that's why I like the Ultramarines. Because the second everything is fixed, in theory, Gilliman should just walk away. He's done. I'm finished. This is it. I'm out. Bye.
Like, I fixed the problems. Mm-hmm. You guys can handle it for me.
Yeah, He's the most likely to fill out a resignation letter. And so you take all of that and you can just see why they're great. They have changed a lot over time. Because there's like 5 seconds there where like in Rogue Trader, they were traitors, like hidden in the Eye of Terror. Yeah, it was kind of odd.
So...
right?
On angsty tweenage phase for him.
There's also this theory that the two hidden legions were just folded into the Ultramarines secretly, which is part of why their numbers are so beefy. Makes sense. There's also this other theory floating around that because when the traitors split, some stayed loyal. Some stayed, okay, well, I still want to serve Dad. And so the way Gilliman smoothed that over is, that guy? Yeah, he's always been an Ultramarine. He's just wearing black the entire time. Different thing. He was. Listen. We corrected the issue. He's now wearing the sanctioned color of ultramarine. Okay, let's move on. Which is another reason their numbers are so beefy. Maybe we don't know. They have some mystery to them, but I'll be honest, not as much as the other legions. There's not any secret ultramarines running around in a cabal. There's no.
The ultramarines are pretty.
There's no
cut and dry. You know what they're about.
Exactly right, and. It's kind of easy to see why the poster boys are the setting, you know? They're my personal favorite. They're the ones I've gravitated towards since the very beginning, pretty much. Because, like I said, if you couldn't tell by my favorite character in a lot of things, functionality. I need that.
He is the guy who picks human warrior.
Not human warrior, per se, but just functional.
What if your last... Well, actually, I'll be fair. Your first D&D character was an artificer. But he was human.
That's low.
What was your second D&D character? A human, but he's slightly vampire, but he denies it. Okay. What's your third D&D character?
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode.
It's a human.
As always, none of this is possible without you guys. So thank you.
He's also a paladin, which is literally one step away from warrior. It's a warrior who prays.
He doesn't even pray.
And he doesn't even pray, so he might as well be a warrior.
This is betrayal of the highest order.